Daily Podcast.
Hello, welcome back to Extreme Gaming Podcast. Today is July the 25th, episode 238. I'm Trev, as always. I'm just going to go by Trev because I changed my name more times than I changed my underwear. So Trev will do. And joining me on the show today is...
Howdy, GreyGamer25. Just call me Grey.
Yeah, that's how dull and boring we're getting. How are you, Grey? Are you good?
Pretty good. Things have been hopping and jumping in the world of gaming as well as other stuff.
Busy.
So, we definitely got a few things to talk about.
We do. Always do. Even in a slow week, we still have some things to discuss. Before we go on with the show, let's just get some of the usual paperwork out of the way. If you haven't already, please join our Discord. If you haven't joined Discord, why have you not joined our Discord? It's basically found at discord.gg/extremegamingpodcast, or just search on Google for it if you can't be bothered typing that in. And we on occasion get some questions to ask on the podcast to do with opinion on games, to do with hardware. Maybe Gray might not be able to tell you the answer to that piece of hardware, but he'll be able to tell you the answer to something to do in his mod corner, for example. I'm usually pretty good with the hardware as well. So you can just type questions in for Gray and I, or DM us on Discord, and we can read them out in the podcast. And last but not least, Gray, our own two podcasts. That's another reason to go to the server, the Discord server, because we've got three things in one there. It's gaming first and foremost, but Gray has his room in there for podcasting, Gray's Green Room. A show done every single month on entertainment-based activities, what's happening in the streaming world, in the movie theatre. See, I said movie theatre instead of cinema, Grave. See, how international am I?
Movie theatre, cinema, yeah.
And that's Grey's Green Room. It can be on YouTubes and on audio podcasts and platforms, and the Trekway as well, just for those that do like Star Trek. We have a room in Discord for that, and that can be found audio podcasts and platforms on the YouTubes at the Trekway. So now that's out of the way, Mr. Gray. Yep. We can go on and talk about some things. You put Once Human to next week, even though I had it on for this week and it was delayed a week. Why'd you do that?
Well, we had mentioned about... I got some news on Once Human, so we are going to talk about it.
Yes, we are, a little bit. We can talk about it next week when Matt's back on as well.
Right. As far as talking about the actual gameplay that we went through, it'd be better next week when Matt's back. But I played about 8 or 10 hours in it already, and I'm enjoying it, but we can get into everything about it when Matt's back.
Can you give me your initial opinion on it? Like, you don't need to... We can talk about it a little bit, and then Matt can tell. He's played the most, so he can talk about it more in depth next week as well. Yeah.
I mean, I like several things about it, but I like it because it's different, definitely. There's a couple little things that I could probably do better, but it's not like game-changing things, and it is early access, right? So so there's a couple little things that I think could have been done a wee bit easier, simple little UI, you know, things that could have been a little different or whatever, but that's not too bad. I mean, everything else I like. I like how it's a survival game, but it doesn't get you... Some survival games, if you don't drink for 5 minutes, you die. At least in this game, you can play like maybe 20 or 30 minutes without dying, you know, which is nice. You still got to drink and eat, but they don't do it so much that you go bananas over it, because that's the worst part, when you're just like constantly worrying about water all the time or whatever. And I you need to be concerned about it, but I don't want to sit there and just, oh, I'm going to die now.
It's a survival game for a reason, though. You got to survive.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it's going to be more of a survival game later, because we only met like one real monster per se. That was pretty cool looking, actually.
I missed a monster. What happened with the monster? I think I stepped away at the time. Was that you lot went to the mainland and shenanigans?
Yeah, and then we met this big, tall, kind of tree looking Groot thing that was wearing like a metal thing on his head. When you first see the metal thing, it's kind of like in the water,
okay,
right? So you don't think much of it, but then when the creature awakes, it's actually something that's on his head, and so then he stands up and he's about 30 feet tall. So yeah, we had to beat him.
Right. Okay.
Which really wasn't that difficult if you have something. But this we'll talk more next week. But the skill tree is a little funky. But I figured it out. I think finally. But there's good and bad about that. I like it because it's different. It's not the typical skill tree. And if they just kind of clean it up a little bit, you know, and I think it'll be better. But again, early access. And they seem to be very proactive, too, because they're bringing out updates all the time. They listen to their people, their fans, and they bring out an update. So at least they're staying with it. And I'm going to tell you about the newest update when we get to that point. So
as a free game to play that has a season pass in it, which is very, very bizarre for that type of game to have a season pass in it. Not to say that that's not possible. I've just never seen it before in a survival game. You know, they're usually early access games in PC. You pay an early access fee to buy the game at its current state, and you know there's going to be issues. But then to lop on the season pass, I have no qualms about that because it's a free game, so you know it's fine. I haven't played it as much as you and Matt, especially Matt, because I've just been more busy over the last week. I did nip in for a little cheeky hour or two before the podcast tonight, and what pissed me off was my base was gone. Like, I don't know if you guys see that, but my base was gone and the message popped up in the server and went, we've removed, well, no, something like, I'm paraphrasing, but we moved your base, or you have to relay your base because you haven't been on the server in a little while. And I'm thinking to myself, and? So, like, I mean, I have plenty of survival games you don't go in for weeks and it's still there. The servers are always rammed. It's worth mentioning that. You can usually still get into them, but it warns you. So
yeah, I've had some problems with it and still do.
I don't know if I have the pay. Now, hopefully, if I delve into it a little bit more, I could just press a button or do a thing and it will relay the base the way I left it. But if it wants me to relay it again from scratch, early access game or not, because they've purposely implemented that, it's not like a bug or something, then I'm out, because I'm not, like, I played it a week ago last, just under a week, and for it to do that, and if I have to relay it all again, I'm out, Gray.
Since we're talking about it, I'm going to skip ahead to my story about it, because it kind of touches on some of the stuff you were saying.
Cool.
And you may either like some of what I'm going to tell you, or you may not.
Okay.
But basically, Starry Studios, yes, Starry, like the stars, Starry Studios have decided that they don't like the done-to-death season passes, so they want to do something a little different. So they're calling their seasons scenarios.
Yeah.
And they specifically are going to have each scenario run for only 6 weeks before they rotate out and put the next one in.
What's the name of the studio again? Sorry, Starry what?
Starry. S-T-A-R-R-Y. Starry. Like the star, but starry.
I like it. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. So basically, we have 6 weeks. And what that means is when we started, I believe that we were already getting into the 6 weeks or this particular scenario or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They say some could be a little longer, some could be a little shorter. But on average, it's going to be somewhere around the 6 weeks. They said that each scenario or season, whatever you want to call it, but they're calling it scenario, is packed with unique mechanics, environments, and content. So apparently, the way they're talking, it's kind of like, I'm not going to say a new game, but there's going to be stuff that we haven't done, or maybe there'll be some new things in the skill tree that we haven't seen whenever the scenarios come out. And it's going to be both for PvE and PvP. And that's another thing I like about it. There hasn't been enough until recently good PvE games, because I'm the kind of person, I don't like PvP, never did like PvP.
Why is that, Gray? Is that because you get your arse handy to you?
Well, pretty much. And also because a lot of people like to grief you all the time and stuff. It's ridiculous. But
true.
That doesn't mean I don't like multiplayer. Multiplayer is different. We all play together, but we're all playing together in once human in a PvE world. So that's different. That's fun. But when you got to sit there and constantly worry about people always you know, doing weird things.
You can take on other people, though, can't you, in a PvE environment, in this PvE environment, but the conditions are more limited. You've got to initiate it and accept it, and it's not just shoot on sight, I believe.
I think so too, although I haven't seen that, what they say about that in the article that I was reading. Anyway, they said that some of the scenarios, but not all of the scenarios, are going to become permanent. Which ones are going to be permanent? We have no idea. My guess is that if they do a scenario that everybody thinks is cool, they ain't going to get rid of it. They're going to probably keep it, make it permanent. And the ones that are not so great, let's say, or least desirable, they're just going to dump.
Okay.
And move on. It's not a bad idea, actually, to do that, because they can actually play with a lot of different ideas, because they're going to get instant feedback whether people like it or hate it.
That's a good way to feed the game with ideas via the people directly. It's in-game feedback that you're paying for via season pass, I guess. You're kind of paying to make the game better or put in your ideas, because they'll give you a scenario that you like. And if you like it, you're more likely to keep playing it and put money into the season pass.
Sure.
It's different. It is a different idea, man, instead of season scenarios. I like it. I think.
Now, here comes the stuff that you may or may not like. The current scenario that we're playing right now is going to end August 20th.
Right.
So on August 20th, it goes to a new scenario. Now, that comes with a server wipe. Don't get scared yet. Okay, it says server wipe that affects every character, but they said the devs have said that currency, gear blueprints, furniture formulas, cosmetics, house blueprints, friend lists, and story progress will be retained.
Blueprints is important, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. So, and they said resources are partially carried over, maybe not entirely. And then your character will reset to level 1 in each scenario. You start level 1 again. World map exploration is cleared as well. So whatever you discovered in the last scenario is going to be different in the new scenario. Because it's a new scenario, or you know, whatever. But just so if you all didn't hear that the first time, currency, gear blueprints, furniture formulas, cosmetics, house blueprints, friends lists, and story progress will not change. Everything else will, which leads me to believe that means, I guess, although they didn't say it, that your base is going to get wiped out on the server wipe. And then you have to build a new one.
Great.
Now,
everyone definitely hears you first time. Don't worry about that.
No, I know. But so many people go for server wipe and they're already like, I'm out. Server wipe, I'm out. Never going to play the game. But they at least retain a lot of stuff. So it's not like it's going to be a complete server wipe. You're starting all at zero.
Why are they doing this? Is it they have to early access? Is there problem things that they have to?
No, they simply say that this is the way they want to do it. They want to come out with a new scenario every time. They want to wipe, but not. It's kind of like it's almost like a half wipe. It's not really a full wipe, to be honest. But whatever.
But every 6 weeks, man. Oh.
Every 6 weeks, yeah. But well, remember now, this is still you know, early access. So if all of us complain that we want it to be 4 weeks or we want it to be 8 weeks, whatever, they're obviously going to listen to us. And they didn't say they're stuck on straight on the 6 weeks. They figure around six. Let's put it this way, between you and I, if they come out with a scenario that everybody hates, they're going to end the scenario a lot faster than 6 weeks. If they hit one that everybody is really enjoying, you can be sure that it's going to go longer than 6 weeks.
I shouldn't complain too much, Gray, because my old faithful game that I've not played for quite a while now, Rust from back in the day. Well, not back in the day. I played it back in the day, but back still day, going yeah. very strong. It's and I would like to get back to that at some point. Maybe I'll get some of the boys back into that. It would wipe at the longest once a month. But it's been like that for so long that's the norm. I guess I was expecting something different from this game because, I mean, it's early access. It can go in so many different directions. I'm slightly bummed because the base looks like a house, I must admit, and I'm sure you can do a lot more. Like, my base is gone, but I checked Matt's out, and it was like an actual bloody house.
Well, you know, the thing is, the house blueprints are not going. So if you've earned a bunch of house blueprints,
can build again
then
quickly.
All you got to do is just build the house again instead of going from complete scratch and trying to find the blueprint. One of the things I really like in the game that I thought was different for me anyway, is that there is a section of pre-built. It's almost like a prefabricated house. You know, prefabs are like already built more or less on a particular template. So I was looking, and they actually had prefabbed buildings, you know, bases, houses, whatever. And they had something like, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was like 8 or 10 or 12 different things that you could choose from, different types of houses. And I was like, really? This is kind of interesting. So I clicked on this one that was kind of like an octagonish building that went straight up 3 floors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going like, well, that's kind of cool. I can have 3 floors. I can get on the roof and defend it or whatever. And basically, when you click on it, the thing I really liked about it is it tells you exactly what you need and what you're missing. So if you go on there and it says you have, like, you know, 6 of the 9 building materials, you have to go and get the other 3. Or you might have to open up a new blueprint if you don't have it. So you go get that or, you know, work on it.
Right.
And then once you do have everything, you click on this one building and just drop it where you want it. You don't have to build anything. It's just the whole thing is built.
Maybe that's what
no furniture. It's empty inside.
Maybe that's what will happen with my base then. One button and it's all back down again.
Yeah, something like that, right? So I think because I'm not like, it's not that I dislike building. I don't have the patience for building too much. That's why I liked Enshrouded so much, because they had buildings that were already there. Whether they were nice or dilapidated didn't matter to me.
You moved in, didn't you? You moved in like a squatter that won't leave someone's house. You just
exactly.
moved in.
And in Enshrouded, I had, in the course of the game, I think I've had 4 different places that I took over. One I gave up so that I could, because I really didn't need it anymore. And the other ones I still have. And I came into this one place that had a whole farm and everything already there. Now, I still had to till the soil. I still had to get the seeds. I still had to farm it. But the farm was there.
Gray's an annoying tenant that won't move out and doesn't pay the rent for months at a time.
There you go. So I'm assuming from what they're saying, I have to go back and make sure I unlock everything for that structure that I want. I'm pretty close, I think.
Right.
Once I do, then technically the way they're talking, that means that if they wipe, all I got to do is just go get the materials that I need and click, boom, I got it back again. You know, I may have to, and they said they still were going to retain furniture formulas and blueprints. So that means all I got to do is reconstruct my furniture or whatever. That's pretty simple, you know, and stuff, or make a new bed or whatever. No big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So really, it may not be as bad as it sounds, you know, from what I'm reading.
Right.
I mean, the thing I like about this, I think, and the thing I like about Enshrouded is that they really are shaking up the formula a little bit and trying to be daring and come out with new stuff. And if it's liked, great. If it's hated, that's okay too. So we are getting some different things instead of the same cookie cutter stuff all the time. You know, so I'm kind of happy about that. That's kind of neat. The only thing I noticed that they don't do, or well, they don't do it yet, you can't go out and get your own server if you want, which I find kind of strange. I would say, though, why wouldn't you want to have that feature?
Well, considering how busy they are, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, like, maybe one day they might do that. Right now, they're not. But I would think, like, because if you and I and Matt like the game so much, we can go out and get a server very, very inexpensively and split it between the 3 of us, and we would be super happy because it would be our own server.
Why do we want to jump for a server that quickly? It happens quite a few games we play. It's not always a bad thing, but I think you go in and use another public server for a while with other people in it, and then look at that as an option.
Sure, sure. I'm not saying that we will do that. I'm just saying, but the option should be there because we might want to, you know. And if we really like it a lot, like as much as you liked Rust when you were playing it, you know, if you have your own server and there's at least 3 of us, you know, or more playing the game, it's worth it. You know, it's not worth it if it's just you, and it's almost not worth it if it's only 2 people.
But why is it worth it? What advantages do you get having your own server compared to a public one?
I mean, generally, if it's run the same way, you have a lot of control in what happens in the server. So you have a list of all kinds of stuff that you could decide to do. So, like, let's say you don't think there's enough. Yeah, but it's not really just cheating. It's setting up the world the way you want it. Like, let's say there's only, I don't know, you're hunting and there's hardly any animals to hunt.
Right.
So you just tweak it just a little bit so there's a few more animals.
Right.
You know, or something to make it a little bit better. Or there's a particular enemy that you don't like and you think he's way too overpowered. So now you just tweak down his stats just a little. You know, things like that. To get it the way you want it. And then once you get it the way you want it, assuming that you're really happy with your server and you're committed and other people maybe even might join you, now you've got the so-called perfect world, I guess, you know, that's more under your control. The same thing with Enshrouded, too. I thought Enshrouded was going to come out where you can have your own servers, but they're not. That's okay. The game is great.
Great. If a game is early access, I let it away with so much. Another thing. That's not the priority at the moment, I wouldn't imagine. Sure. And that's absolutely fine. Take your time. Get the gameplay good and right. Mm-hmm. And then I think giving you the option to bring out your own server should be something that you aim to release towards the end of your early access or when you went into 1.0. Because it's really, that's a mainstay feature. But we'll talk about it more when Matt's here next week, because I would love to know how to get on that motorbike of his outside his base that he left there. I tried. I could not borrow his bike at all. So maybe he can fill us in. He's doing well. He's got some things up and running. I do like the fact that I could go to your guys' bases and use your workbenches and go in and like make shit that I have the recipes for or the blueprints for. I like that. So too early for me to comment much more on it until we jump in. But Matt's on holiday this week, so maybe you can join us next week for that. Okay.
Well, there is one thing in the game you might like, and I didn't realize it until I tried it.
Strip club?
But during the game, you know how you're supposed to build your camp? Aside from your base, the base is different, but a camp can be set up wherever, and that way if you die or something, you spawn back at the camp instead of way back at your base.
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of curious. I was sitting there going, well, can you build more than one camp? And then I'm thinking like, well, at the very least, I would think that you could build it and the other one would be destroyed. So I tried it, and I built a camp, and immediately it popped up and said, if you want to build your camp here, the other one will be gone.
Oh.
And I said, that's fine. I didn't have a problem with that.
Really?
So this way, what you do is it's almost like the altar system in Enshrouded, but within Enshrouded, you can build, you know, if you keep progressing and you update, you can build up to like 8 altars. But when you first start the game, you can only build like 2 or whatever. So this one, you just, as you progress in the game, you don't want to go all the way back to where you started from. You just pop a camp down. And then if you die, you just come right back to that camp and then then jump back in. So it's not a terrible thing. I wouldn't mind maybe being able to build maybe one more camp.
That doesn't get rid of your base then. That's just your spawn point essentially, yeah?
Pretty much. But you do have a crafting bench there of limited. You can only do so much with it. The other thing in the game too, I think is that you do have transportation point towers and you have to go find them because you have to unlock them. So Matt and I unlocked one. So now there was one where we were, I think, and then there was a second one. But if you look at the map, you see a bunch of these spread out all over the place, and you have to physically go there and unlock the tower. Once you do that, then you can fast travel to every tower.
Was that the one we met together so we could? Because for those that don't know, we were all in the server at one point, and Gray's literally standing more or less in the spot I was on in the map. And we couldn't see each other. And I'm thinking to myself, what janky piece of shit is this? Like, come on. This is not what you want in a game. And it's still a bit janky because you then have to go to this tower, even though you're on the same server, but you're not. This kind of transportation tower. And then it kind of transfers you to, I didn't know how you would describe it, Gray, an instance within the server
or another world.
You're still on the same server, but it's another world in the server. And I'm thinking, usually you have one world per server. That's par for the course.
Yeah, I found that system, and I think you did too, and so did Matt. That was the one biggest pain in the butt thing in that game, because we were all in the game, we were all in a team, but you two of us, I think one of us was in one world and the other one was in the other world. And I'm like, we're running around going like, well, Trav, it says you're right here in front of me and you're not there, you know, and stuff. And I'm going, what's going on? So then we finally learned, but they don't really tell you this. But when we get to the one of the towers or whatever, now we see that you can you can not only move from there, you move to a different world. So I had to figure out what world I was in and what world you were in. And then we decided what world we all wanted to be in. And then we sat there and we typed in the world we wanted to be in. Once we did that, we were all together. by the way, if anybody's thinking out there, oh, God, you have to do that every time you get in the game. No, it remembers the world you were in. And then you come back to it when you come back to the game. But that was like confusing as hell. I remember the three of us are running all around going like, why can't we see each other? We thought it was an error in the game.
Yeah.
We were invisible. And they don't tell you, man. We had to do so much searching around and
had
stuff
to
find out how you did this.
Had it to was Google like, the answer.
That was kind of dumb. Early access or not? I mean, come on.
It is dumb because it's one world per server. That's just normal common sense. But this game is obviously wanting to do things differently. Hence why it's scenarios and not seasons. Like whatever. I mean, that may work. It may not. Right. Well. Certainly talk about it more when Matt's here next week because he's played the most out of this compared to all of us. Sure. I wonder if he bought the season pass as well. Like I've no qualms of buying season passes if it's a game I really like, but not just now. It's too early to tell. So yeah, a little bit of gaming news is always great. As we alluded to last week, and there's no real surprise here, the rumors of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, the more modern, pun intended, take on the game, the remake, if you like, that did come out to Xbox Game Pass yesterday. We're not surprised. We knew it was going to happen. I probably will visit that at some point. Because a couple of weeks ago, a week or two ago, I jumped in to play Modern Warfare 2. I don't have 3. So I'm kind of glad because I was considering buying it until I read these rumors. Saved myself some cheddar cheese, so I'm happy with that. And I enjoyed myself just playing for a couple hours. I know we have a couple of people in the several people in the community that love a bit of COD, and it's more attainable. I'm more likely to play it if it's on Game Pass. I think it was smart them bringing it to Game Pass for a few reasons. One, it will soften the blow of them putting the prices up. Two, it will get more people likely to sign up to Game Pass and or buy Black Ops 6 when it comes out. Because the thing with Black Ops 6 when it comes out, you'll be able to play the early access beta before basically anyone else, I guess, that hasn't got a hold of a Game Pass.
Isn't it like a three-day, five-day?
There's days. There's more than one day. I know not much. probably a long weekend thing. And I may very well jump in and check that out. It's just CODs are... It's ridiculous how big the file sizes are for a COD. And I know they're fixing that. You know, like they try and... When you watch on your Blizzard app and you watch it download an update, you'll see it download like a few gig and then you'll see it reclaiming disk space. Even though the games are still, I don't know why, like, but anyway. And they should also move all their stuff into the Xbox Game Pass app. I'm sick of having two apps, like two launchers. Why? Like, there's no need for that. I know the Blizzard one is, I think the Blizzard Activision one's decent, but move it all to the one platform. But anyway, so basically, Modern Warfare 3 is there. Apparently the campaign wasn't very good, although I gave up playing campaigns on COD a while ago. Just played the multiplayer. It's weird though, Greg, because I started off playing the campaigns because I was crap at multiplayer. And then I just started playing multiplayer a bit. And I got okay at that. Like I'm not like a Jamma who is he's shit out of that. but I don't want to play a game that much to get close to his level. Like it turns into a job and I stop enjoying it. That's not usually the game that you can jump in and out of unless you're naturally talented. I wouldn't say I'm naturally talented. It's hard work to get to an okay level. So the fact it's came to Game Pass is great. Jump in, have a little fun. I mean, we know Warzone's free anyway, so, so I actually prefer a multiplayer game on the odd occasion than Warzone, because Warzone's King of the Hill format, you know, last man standing, last team standing. I don't think I've ever won a game of Warzone. I haven't played many games, to be fair, but I've never won a game because that is the elite players that win. Did you not win a game or nearly win a game behind in the grass, Gray?
The what now? Sorry?
Did you not win a game by hiding in the grass?
Oh, yeah, I did that once.
Or was that Ring of Elysium or something?
I forget now. There's so many games, but I'm good at hiding, man, especially if I have no talent. Well, the thing that I always wondered about a game like that is why don't they come out with like level maps or something? Like, in other words,
what do you mean?
You know, this world is restricted to everybody from level 5 to 15 or something, and then another one that's, you know, instance that's 15 to 25 and 25 mm-hmm. to 40, you know, whatever. But they never do any of that. So the problem is, as soon as you get in the game, first of all, not like in PvP, that's the way it is with me. But when I do get in there, I'm wiped out like within seconds. Because I don't have that kind of experience. So it's a game that I just don't bother playing because I'm not there to get wiped out every 5 seconds.
Why do you think that is? Because you can't move the old trackball quick enough to like get around
and
shoot
them? No, it's not the new trackball. These guys are hitting things on a dime, man. I've seen some of these people play, and there's like, on my screen, it's a tiny little dot about this big as a period on a Microsoft Word or something. And these guys are able to like kill the guy. Just like that. And I'm sitting there going like, right, I have a lot of chance against that.
yeah, I know. It's not, they're not supposed to be easy games like at all. Like for the hardcore,
I don't expect
them
to be easy.
Yeah. I mean,
Look, if I could last 1/3 of the time, I would be happy. I don't even come close to that.
Hey, to each their own. We prefer other types of games like that, but I don't mind jumping in for a game. So if I'm going to, this is good that Modern Warfare 3 came out, because I'm more likely to jump in there for a quick game, which you can get with a standard traditional. And I only play Team Deathmatch. I never play Free For All. I never play the 10 million variants of Team Deathmatch that there is. I just want good old-fashioned, I shoot you, you're dead. There's no dog tags. You don't come back as a zombie. You're dead. He's dead, Jim. That's it.
You don't go to the gulag or whatever that was.
Yeah, the gulag. Well, that happens in Warzone in King of the Hill. Yeah. I'll probably download that, I think. I just, with my crap internet connection, it'll probably take me a while. Counter with the new...
Do you know the size, by any chance? The file size?
Well, par for the course, every single COD has been over 100 gig each. For the full thing.
I think that's small. I was going to say over 200.
No, that's not small. What the hell? That's not small, man. No.
I don't know, man. I've seen some that are like 150, 176, and 180. Like,
yeah,
whoa.
But I was going to add to that statement and say it does give you the option to uninstall elements of it. So if you just want the multiplayer without the co-op or the zombie mode or whatever, you can you can uninstall them, right? So a lot of people just put the base underlying part of the game and say multiplayer in, jobs are good. And so, anyway, moving on just really quickly, this is maybe going to be useful for the Starfield fans out there, the Starfield nuts out there. We do have they are progressing with their updates. They've got an update coming out before the end of the year that's going to be paid, as we know, but they are continue to bring out small updates as we go along. And I find this fascinating that this wasn't in the game from day one, and they're going to, the next update will introduce land vehicles. Like, this is not official. This is like leaked screenshots online. It was a buggy that someone managed to grab a picture of. I'm really surprised a game that in depth doesn't...
It makes absolutely no sense. You're flying a starship around, but you don't have anything to drive in. You just hoof it everywhere.
Well, you don't want to be able to... I don't want to take a ship for a quick hop, but sometimes it's just easier and quicker to jump in a land vehicle. Like, your Star Citizens, your Elite Dangerous, I don't know when they got land vehicles in from the start or later on. I can't comment on that, but they've certainly got land vehicles in. So, and it's kind of cheeky that their next major update... I can't remember the name of it, but when that one comes out, it's going to be paid. Thank you, mate. Yes. That's a bit cheeky charging for that, considering like Game Pass, like they're putting the prices up, you know. There are games that will bring out. Look at No Man's Sky. Yeah, and I know that a lot of people hate that, but they haven't charged for an update yet. They keep bringing out content. Rust, my game that from back in the day, doesn't get that level of content, but they're always optimizing and tweaking and bringing out stuff every single... used to be every week, and then it came to 1.0, then it went to once a month. That should be the model we're looking at, because if you get people invested in a game that they love that much, great, they will buy the skins, they will buy the battle passes, they will buy the cosmetics and whatnot, and that's how you... how do you think all these people at Facepunch, aka Russ, make their money? Via skins. They get a percentage of it, and they bring out DLCs and things like that as well. So, but yeah, it surprised me there was no land vehicles to now, but I found that interesting. So yeah, that's happening. And I panicked when panic's probably the wrong word. I was slightly concerned when I read the next bit of news. However, it's not what you think. I read it as Humble Bundle going bye-byes, right? Remember Humble Bundle? You buy a bunch of games really cheap for charity, and there's usually one good game in there, and the rest are humdingers.
Marginal.
Sorry, I just remember the humdinger quote in one of those Prodigy episodes, Gray, and it gave me a chuckle. Yeah, so most of them are crap, but you have one or two half-decent ones, and then you'll get the odd gem in there. But no, it's Humble Game. They're like sister company. They are laying off. There's more staff layoffs in the gaming industry, and I think that'll continue, Gray. I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. Yeah. Sad to say. But they're laying off all 36 members of their staff, right? All 36 members, but they're not getting out of business.
So basically what that means is there's a president and vice president, and they're going to be making the game.
Right. Yeah, I'm confused when I read that as well. Maybe they've got AI in or something. Maybe they'll do something. I don't know.
They're going to say, hey, make the game for us. Okay, I'll be back.
But yeah, anyway, the main thing I wanted to mention that we only found out yesterday, Fallout London finally has been released. Now, that wasn't their fault, Gray, if you remember. That was actually Bethesda's fault, course, if anything. Yeah. It was supposed to launch... I want to say April, but it was delayed a few months because of Bethesda put out their next gen update, which was mainly aimed at consoles. But it meant because they were bringing things up to a certain standard that they were changing fundamental things in the game's engine and in the background, and that would break the Fallout London guys' work that they were doing. So they had to go back to the drawing board and test everything again. Now, for those that don't know, Fallout London is a mod, and we'll be getting on to mods at some point with Gray. Massive mod. In fact, it's the size of nearly Fallout 4 in its own right, and it runs off Fallout 4. I've only played a little bit of Fallout 4. I need to get back to it, but I need to finish Fallout 76. This is why I get pissed off at people that say, I've got no games to play on board. I want to go through the screen and throttle them. You have plenty of hundreds of games.
I only went through probably about 30, 40% maybe of Fallout 4 because I was getting mad at some of the mechanics. And I used to load mods into that game because some of the mechanics were weird.
Well, that's okay. You're mod guy, mod boy. That's, I totally understand. Not for me as well. No, I'm vanilla.
It is for you because you're going to play Fallout London.
Not necessarily.
It's a mod, dude. It's a total conversion.
No, I didn't mean that. I'm saying I'm not necessarily going to be playing that. I might at some point, but there's too much to play at the moment in front of it. You know what I'm saying? So, no, I might do. I've got Fallout 4. I thought you needed Fallout 4 and all the DLC. I'm hearing conflicting reports. One said that you needed the DLC, and one said you just need the base game. So you could get the DLC cheap as chips. And it is literally all the main parts of London brought into the game. There's a game trailer for it as well. In fact, if I'd thought, I would have lined it up in advance as a separate source so I could just flick to it so we can incorporate like trailers into the Twitch live stream. And then for the people listening, then they can just listen to the audio.
It'll be edited out, they'll never know.
No. It's just more excuse for people to tune into the Twitch live stream or watch the VOD. Yeah. Or watch the VOD. That is out now, launched on GOG. The same guys that make The Witcher.
It's just something so different that I think it would be kind of fun. So I probably will try it. I don't know how much of it I'll play, but I'd like to at least try it.
Did you watch the trailer for it, Gray? That I posted.
Yeah, the one that they were. There may be a newer one out now, but I watched the one that was not too long ago.
I posted the trailer today in the gaming channel.
I didn't see that particular one.
So the reason I was asking that was I was going to ask you how much of the Cockney banter, the Cockney rhyme slang that you understood, because there's a lot of that in that trailer.
Did they have subtitles in that game?
Just do your research. So. Just do your research. That's what I would say, you know. Or watch more British TV, like we watch American TV and we understand you guys easy enough.
No, I go all the way back to when Python first started.
You're different.
You're talking about the 70s. Yeah. And I also watched the original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was in the 80s. So I watched a lot of British humor.
No, I'm talking Cockney humor, particularly.
No, yeah, Cockney is a very thick accent, so that's a rough one to try to... Like, what did he say?
The UK is full of accents, mate. You're kind of screwed if you ever come over here.
Scotland is where you are is pretty much the same thing, too. I mean, you sent me that video one time, which I thought was hilarious. But I'm sitting there trying to understand what they're saying. And, of course, they're really speaking.
Was that the piss take of Star Trek?
I think so, yeah.
Tayside like, in space, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, what? What are they saying? And then I finally found one that actually had an English... you know, whatever, subtitle at the bottom, which then I enjoyed it even more because I heard them and I could get, now I understood what they were saying exactly. So that was actually even more fun. But boy, I couldn't understand half the stuff they were saying, but it didn't matter because it was still funny as hell.
Well, after this, you will have to go and watch that trailer in the gaming channel on our Discord because that sums up nicely. I'm curious because those guys put so much work into that. They spent a good few years making that. Yeah. They're not charging for it. They did have a Patreon open for those that wanted to voluntarily contribute, but they did make it on their own spare time, and they've added thousands of lines of dialogue. They've added a lot of quest missions, a lot of actual physical gaming landmass to go and investigate and explore. So respect to those guys massively. I'd like to say I've got Fallout 76 to finish first, but I'll probably download it so that it's sitting there.
Yeah, you don't have to finish it. Just go on to the next thing.
Oh, my God. This is the thing with PC games. We never finish anything. We're always moving.
Some things we don't. Most things we do. Depends. Yeah,
that's true.
Like,
that's
true. You're going to finish the heavy-duty RPGs like God of War and Ragnarok and...
Well, yeah,
Rise of Forbidden West, things like that.
You love them, though. You're invested in them. You're... You enjoy them usually. So, yeah, it's out now. Get cracking, get playing. If you're not a member of the Discord, jump in and give us your opinion on it. If you're a member of the Discord, just tell us if it's any good or not, because I will play at some point, but it won't be probably anytime soon. So what news have you, Mr. Gray, gamer of 25?
I spotted something I thought was kind of interesting. There's a game. It's not out yet. It's an indie, but it's called Mass Conflict Ignition. And the only reason why I was kind of curious is because they said it was inspired by Command and Conquer Generals, which I remember playing that game, you know, years ago. So I'm going like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So as I started looking into it a little bit more, because they loved the devs that are making this game, since they loved Command and Conquer Generals so much, they wanted to create a game that captured the style, the flavor, the art design, et cetera, of that game. But at the same time, bringing up the quality some to where it's run, you know, it's going to run better. It doesn't look so, it doesn't have the, it's kind of like a combination of having some of the old look with a new coat of paint on it, this kind of thing. So they decided this day wanted to start making it now. By the time the game comes out, it could be a while yet. But what they did do though is they put out a short, less than a minute of gameplay as it exists right now. And I had to go take a look at this, and I watched it, and I was like, I'm excited to see this game.
I'm watching it just now.
What little bit they had really looked good, and it really looked like getting back to the Command and Conquer stuff. And I was just like, wow, that's pretty cool. So if it runs as well as they are going to make it, or if it runs as good as maybe what we saw in the video, and if you don't know the clip, we'll try to put it in the description below so you can see it. But I was like, when I saw that, I was just going like, wow, this actually looks pretty good. So I'm sitting there thinking like, well, this might be kind of neat. So anyway, it's supposed to be getting to early access. It's not even that early access yet. They don't really say how long it's gonna take. They do have an official Discord server. And again, maybe we'll try to put that down below, or we'll put the story that we're talking about down below so you can look for it. Okay. And they are taking people seriously that love those kind of games. They're taking their comments at their Discord server to try to, you know, incorporate some of the ideas into the game. Apparently, there's going to be 3 unique factions with more to come. At least at early access, they'll have the 3. Fast-paced combat, base building, building garrisons, tech structures, support powers. You know, think Command and Conquer if you remember the game. There's a single-player campaign, which they claim is set in the modern yet near-future setting. They're going to have skirmish mode against AI, or you can play other players. Then, of course, they're going to have co-op modes with other players, too. But the other thing that I thought was really cool is they are going to have a world editor so that you can make your own maps. Remember I was telling you last week that they used to have that out on many games, including Far Cry 4, and then they stopped it? Mm-hmm. Where you could sit there and make your own maps. And it, to me, I don't know why they would ever get rid of that. I would think that after the game has been played out and everybody's bought the game and they've made their money, they should bring out a world editor and let people make their own maps. It just makes the game last that much longer. I mean, Far Cry 4, people were playing that game for a long, long time because everybody would still come out with maps. So when I heard this, I'm sitting there going like, well, that's cool, because now if the game ever gets a little stale or you know, their game and you want something new, people are going to be constantly making maps. Not to mention, you know, mods and stuff like that. So now the game would be a little more fresh every time. So I was very happy to hear that. And so, like I said, they don't have a date yet on when it's going to come out. But I would just, you could Google Mass Conflict and Discord. Maybe it'll come up with their Discord, but we'll try to put the link for you. But I'm going to keep track of this because I'm really excited to see what this thing's going to look like. What did you think of the trailer you saw?
I think there's a lawsuit coming from EA Games, because it's basically EA Games own Westwood, or I think Westwood Studios are gone bye-bye, but basically EA own Command & Conquer, and it's a rip-off of Command & Conquer, which is a classic, by the way. I don't know if I've got patience anymore for those kind of games, but I'm never going to slag them. I will talk them up because they're so addictive, and I bought the remaster of Command & Conquer for nostalgic reasons, but they've still to remaster Red Alert 2, which is my favorite of all of them.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So I can't, and I love the cutscenes as well, man. It was just, oh, it was so good. Mm-hmm. Those games are brilliant, man. Like, honestly, they are absolutely fantastic. It looks like Command and Conquer, so I'd imagine it will be. Did you remember? It's not out yet in early access, so I guess we don't have a price yet for it, no?
No.
You see it now, right?
Not yet. But considering it's indie and what they're doing, my guess
cheap
is that either early access will open up with no cost or a very small cost.
Yeah.
And or maybe it'll come out at $25 or something like that.
Right.
And then
go
from there.
Okay.
I would think that would be logical for that kind of a game.
Yeah.
Especially if it's indie. I mean, really, no, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think there's really any truly indie game that came out more than maybe $30, you know, when it came right out, 30, 35, maybe.
Yeah.
None of them were doing the 50, 60, 70 routine, like the AAA, Quad A, 5A, 10A games.
No, that's just Ubisoft. and that game's massively dive bombing right now, man, honestly. If you're a CEO of a gaming studio, Skull and Bones, then you keep your mouth shut. Yeah. He's the guy that called it a quadruple A game. I went, just because you say the game is good doesn't mean it's good. It's average at best.
Okay, yeah, but you know what's funny about Skull and Bones is that even if the game is good, it came out too late. I mean, you know, Sea of Thieves just totally totally command that market. I mean, they're and the game is good. I'm not saying that there's certain things about Skull and Bones that might be better if you like the more realistic graphics as opposed to the animated kind of graphic. But that's not the point. The thing is that when you have a game that totally dominates the market with their pirate thing, like Sea of Thieves, and then you come out not 1 year later, not 2 years later, but multiple years later, it's already been done.
Yep.
So nobody cares. And as much as they don't want to admit it, Ubisoft messed up. And I know they messed up. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah,
but they were committed and they had to get the game out.
The pressure on them was once they released it, it had to be nothing short of stellar, perfect. Otherwise, it would get slated. And it came out and it was... See, if that came out without all the problems it had before, it would have been... You would have went, yeah, that's decent. That's okay. That's not bad. Yep. Yep. But because of the problems and delays it had, people went, yeah, right, okay. This is basically an Assassin's Creed Black Flag type standalone game. They were going to bring this out as Assassin's Creed DLC, decided just to keep it for its own separate game. But maybe I'll get it one day when it goes out down to like 10 quid or something, nice and cheap in the sale. I'm not paying a penny more than that. No. But anyway, right, so are you... Any more on that subject, Mr. Gray? You've got something else there on the agenda, I believe. Best super weapons in a strategy game, I believe.
Yeah, the reason why I picked on this one is because as I was going through the list, I actually remember some of these, and I used to remember how good some of these super weapons were. Now, this is going back to some of the old real-time strategy games like Command & Conquer and other ones like that. But I do remember playing the games. I do remember the super weapons. And the super weapons were always cool because you had to build up, you know, time to get to that point. You could only release it every so often. It wasn't something like you just do willy-nilly. So you had to be able to plan it out properly, release it, and then you couldn't use it again for quite a while. So it was all kind of very cool.
Great. This isn't gaming news.
What do you mean?
It's not gaming news. But I'm winding you up. Carry on. It's an article. It's an opinion piece.
I agree. But I like how they specifically went to the super weapons. I totally forgot about those because I haven't played those kind of games in a very long time. So I'll kind of buzz through the list because some of them you may remember, some of them you may not, or our people out there may or may not. But we'll go from 15 to 1 real quick. But 15 is Death Hand Missile from the game Emperor Battle for Dune. So apparently it was what it explains here is it was just one big missile that used to just totally annihilate an awful lot, I guess, on the map. I don't remember because I don't recall. I never played that particular game, so I don't remember. But they have a graphic picture of it. It looked kind of neat. 14 was Xeno Titan, Civilization Beyond Earth. That's going back. Civilization Beyond Earth, because that's an older game. But I don't think I played that particular Civilization game. I don't know if you did.
No.
Yeah. Now, here's one I did play and a lot of people play. The Protoss carrier in StarCraft. And that was a big old giant carrier that floated above the surface and had like multiple weapons on it and stuff. It was very cool. And the nice thing was that you could have more than one. So if you were lucky enough to have a bunch of them, you would just kind of like move them over the map and just annihilate everything as you're going down. I think they had problems, though, because once you had that many, it started to bog the game down a little bit. So you had to figure out how many you could get away with without slowing it down. Mm. But the cool thing was that every carrier, I think, had like 40 interceptors. So you can imagine if you had five of them, you got 200 interceptors flying out of them. And you got to keep track of all that during the game. Yeah. But StarCraft was so much fun that was a blast. I remember that. Number 12 was Chaos Lightning, which sounds kind of cool. And that also was an Emperor Battle for Dune, but I don't remember the game. I
mean, really quickly, Gray. Sorry, my man. Hi, Trub. Thank you very much for the old Twitch sub. Appreciate it, my man. Hope you're good. Hope you're good, my friend. Just popped up there.
Thank you much, Mr. Trub.
Carry on, sir.
11, Firestorm Barrier, Command & Conquer, Tiberian Sun. Do you remember that game?
Well, yeah. Like, I love Command & Conquer. The amount of Command and Conquer entries on this list is impressive. Mate, like, there's so many. I love it.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch on here, which is, like, wild. And we'll kind of move the list a little faster. So number 10 is Psionic Decimator. I love these names. Psionic Decimator. You don't hear these names anymore, man.
That's my special move.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, that's my special move in the bedroom, yeah.
And that would, yeah, oh yeah, okay. That doesn't sound good at all. And that's, I've got this imagined, you know, no. Jeez, that just doesn't work.
Well, I
anyway,
don't know.
That was from Command & Conquer once again, but Red Alert 3. So, and it looked very cool when you let it go. So it was like a big blue, you know, ball that just spread out after you did it. Let's see. Number 9 was the Terran Battlecruiser StarCraft. I think I remember that one, playing the game. So that's pretty cool. And here we go again. Iron Curtain from Command & Conquer Red Alert.
Yay! So,
another good one right there. Yep. Super weapon.
Yep.
This is cool. Weather control device, which again is Command and Conquer, Red Alert 2. Isn't it? There's like a theme going here.
My favorite Red Alert game. And I remember this well. I love this. I absolutely love this. It was magic.
So basically you just flew a bunch of giant clouds over things and lightninged everything to death?
It was, well, literally, yeah. Like, I think it's the lightning that mostly done the damage. It just literally zapped everything. So anything that had power as well went down, which meant your defences would go down at least temporarily until you repaired them. So then you could use that in conjunction with moving your army in, moving your forces in, or sending Tanya in really sneaky. In fact, Tanya better be on this bloody list. Is she in this list? No, she's not. She's at the very top, a picture of her, looking smoking hot, but she was always, you know, remember Tanya? Oh, yeah! And she'd always run, and she was like, she was tough as nails, and she would like take almost anything out, and yeah, brilliant. Anyway, carry on.
Take anything out? What? Wait a minute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 6, nuclear submarine. This I remember from Civilization series. I always used to love the nuclear submarine. You'd have it out in the water, and as soon as you were actually leveled up enough to be able to fire it, you know, you were just loving this. And you're like, all right, you fire it out from the sea and just take out like a whole bunch of land in one shot. That was a lot of fun. It still is a lot of fun on that. And they look good too. And civil, this was starting to get into the better graphic area and stuff. So the effects were looking really, really sharp. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Another nuclear missile from, say it.
Red Alert.
Red Alert again.
I remember this one as well. Yeah, the noises of people that were dying, the soldiers, it was like, imagine the person recording that and the voice and shoot. I'm not going to reenact it just now because I will A, look and B, sound like an idiot and also probably cut the mic off. I'll have to go that high. But I can't remember how you unlocked that.
Do you remember when we used to play the Doom games, the old Doom games? Every time you would kill a creature or something, you go, "Arr." That was all you heard.
Is that not the noises you make when you get out of bed, Gray?
It almost sounded like it. Yeah. But I thought it was back then it was cool. But now when you think about it, you shoot and kill and it goes, and I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, the old nuclear missile. Yep.
Number 4 is Matter Storm, Universe at War. I never played this, but it does sound kind of cool.
It was
a defensive super weapon. Apparently, it would damage your enemies in a wide berth. It supported both defensive and offensive worlds. Casting it is a torrent of dark matter, ooh, destroying enemy units within the area. So that sounds interesting. And now let's go. I should count these up. But now the orbital ion cannon from Command and Conquer
Tiberian. Tiberian Sun, like, or no, it says Tiberian Sirius because it must have been in all the Tiberian games. There was more than one, yeah, there was two or three, was there not? But yeah, I remember this weapon. Very cool.
It was fired from an orbital GDI base and enough to take out almost anything instantly in a superheated blast of directed energy.
There you go.
I like that. That sounds good.
Me too.
The next one I do know because I played this game, Strategic Missile from Supreme Commander. Supreme Commander was a great game. I really loved that game.
I never played it. I meant to, because it was one of the big rivals to Command & Conquer series, wasn't it?
Well, if I remember correctly, I think I'm pretty much remembering this right. Supreme Commander was the first game where you could actually zoom in all the way down to the action, and you could zoom all the way out to almost outer space. That's how far. none of the other games at that time, prior to that, could you zoom in so much. It only had a certain amount you could zoom in, a certain amount you could zoom out. But this one came down to the level, the ground level. And I remember that was kind of cool. I was like, wow, I never saw that before. But the strategic missile was great. It's just, it's like a like an overpowered nuclear missile, but it was really a lot of fun to play with, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Like I said here, the nuke can effectively make a small island nation uninhabitable.
Oh, really? Is that what nukes do? Really? Wow.
Really? Of course. You notice though, when they ever do nukes in games like this, they don't have any fallout, you know, issues. You know, nuclear fallout or radiation. It's just kind of like, yeah, that's it's off the map. But you know, you're okay. You can keep going and doing other things.
That's true. It's
like, oh, really? The Novalith cannon is number one from Sins of the Solar Empire, which I tried to play, but I just couldn't get my head around it. So I ended up abandoning that game. But if you know what the Novalith cannon is, was
how's that number one the most powerful
railgun?
Oh, railgun, right? Okay.
Yeah, intergalactic railgun that apparently you could fire it and destroy planets in another galaxy.
That makes zero bloody sense, even for a sci-fi game. I'm sorry, like, it still uses a projectile at the end of the day, so it will run out of speed long before it hits its target. That's just silly. Why is that number one?
Well, the other thing that I think is funny about it, too, is imagine you fire it, right? And how long it's going to take to reach the other galaxy, like a million years later.
Possibly.
The planet's already gone.
Wait, probably.
Let's fire another one. Anyway, that's just their top 15 list. There's probably more, but I thought that'd be just kind of fun to go back and remember, since I do remember some of them.
Okay.
But it was a fun time, and that's why I kind of was looking forward to that other game, just because I want to try to get back to something like they used to do. I think a lot of those games are catching on because there's a big retro thing going on. You have retro. Chaney is retro. Other people do. I mean, so all this is kind of coming around.
Did you buy the Command & Conquer remastered game that came out a few years ago? Yeah, I've got that. You usually get it pretty cheap because if you play the original, you'll love this because they've boosted up the graphics. You know, you can play at a higher resolution. They're sharper. The cutscenes. Like, they had to literally go into random cupboards and storage containers and find these VHS tapes and try and upscale them and whatnot to try and make them better. So Coco, behave. That's Gray's dog. She's going nuts, probably wanting to bite the postman's hand off.
Yeah, I'll have to close the door. She's probably somebody came to the door and then she goes.
She's going
age.
Bonkers. Anyway, you do that then and I'll carry on. So what we've got next, I was going to discuss this a little bit with Gray, was some people probably heard about the meltdown with Intel, right? And just saying,
does that mean the chips are melting? No,
the Intel meltdown, literally. Well, literally and figuratively. So I've been bigged up Intel for a while now, but they're far from perfect. Well, they're always the safe pair of hands when it came to CPUs for me anyway. But they've had a couple of big issues recently that they still haven't resolved yet, and they're trying to get to the bottom of it. There's two issues that have came that are pretty big deals. One can be possibly repaired, one cannot. So the first one, it can't be repaired. There's an oxidization issue with some of their 13th and 14th gen chips, right? I'm so sorry, Gray, I told you to get a 13th gen chip.
Well, I'm going to hope that my chip isn't one of those that corrodes.
I saw
part of the story that you sent me. I didn't see the whole thing, but did they say how long supposedly until it corrodes?
I mean, no. This is the thing with oxidization, right? That's literal hardware. You can't repair that. It happens when it's getting fabricated. That's a problem with the silicon, and it corrodes over time. So the problem with that is your warranty is only a year or something, so it's probably going to take longer before it fails. So people that bought 13th gen ones right at the start, they might slowly but surely, in fact, they have started slowly but surely finding out probably outside their warranty period.
Yeah, but do they know like which set of chips, you know, sometimes?
It can be any across 13th and 14th gen, mate. They haven't narrowed them down, really. It can happen too.
It's bad luck depending on what you have.
Yeah. So that's just bad luck. That's not happening to many people, that one. So the reason that I won't touch on that too much and move on to the second one is because The first one you can't do much about. I mean, I think they should extend the warranty window. I think that's only fair. That's a decent thing to do.
Yeah.
But the other thing they've got, the big thing that's got people up in arms is games are just crashing with 13th and 14th gen chips. And basically the long short of it is it's down to power issues, down to too much power going through the chip, whether you push that power through the chip or not. Certain games are crashing, and the people that have got the smarts have looked into the logs and have researched this a bit more, the technicians, the geeks and whatnot, and found out that there's just too much juice going through these chips and games will literally crash. So what people were doing was literally having to underclock their chips. So, Gray, you're less likely to have that issue. I mean, it still could technically happen.
Yeah.
You're less likely to have that issue because you'll get the 13700K. So there's a little bit less juice going through that, although hopefully it doesn't happen. You're certainly not immune to it.
Does that mean I shouldn't overclock now?
No, I certainly would. I mean, it's not going to damage the chip. Yeah. It's just going to like crash blue screen and then come back, hopefully. You know, but there is... They think they've identified the issue, Intel, and what they're going to do is literally release a bit
firmware.
Of...
firmware?
Well, chip CPUs are a little bit different. They don't really run in firmware the way that a lot of other things run in firmware, if that makes sense, Gray. And I'm not going to try and pretend to understand it inside and out myself. What they're going to do, though, you can update the code on a chip. You know, there's the kernel on the chip that you can go in and start dicking about with. But what they're going to do is actually release a bit of code to the relevant or the major motherboard providers so that it will then in turn update the chip to stop this happening. So that
is going to be in a BIOS update or something different?
I'd imagine that probably would be within a BIOS update, for the motherboard, because that's, I mean... Yeah, that's how you control a lot of these things. Although saying that, you can. There's a bit of software I've got on my computer that I do use called the Extreme Tuning Utility, which is an Intel bit of software that's used for overclocking undervolting chips. You don't need to go into the BIOS to use that, but you do a lot of stuff like that via the BIOS, Gray. So that will hopefully resolve that issue. It's not looking great for Intel because now the reason this is happening in the 13th and 14th gen and not say 12 or 11 or it might happen in the 15th gen it's coming out is because 13th and 14th gen, for those that don't know, are very similar in architecture, right? So these issues are more contagious, more likely to happen, and that would be the same problem with oxidization as well, Gray. They will hopefully, the thing is, see, when you design a chip, I'm not a chip designer, far from it. They come out with the plans for this years ahead of time. So the 15th gen, or they're actually not going to call it 15th gen, it's got another random name. That, when that comes out, what is it, by the end of the year or something, that would have been locked in the final design for a long while. So they can't go back and change that. Well, they could, but major money. So...
The corrosive thing is ridiculous. I mean, the other one is bad enough, but like you said, at least they can kind of figure it out and fix it. But the corrosive thing is like outrageous. You got to be kidding.
Well, that one is more annoying. I think that's the one they could maybe do something about in the new chips they bring out. But they might not be able to bring this out from an actual CPU level when they launch it immediately. The 15th gen, they'll have to maybe release this same update to motherboard manufacturers to then in turn sort these issues. Because like you buy a big fancy chip, whatever 13th, 14th gen, and especially if you get the key edition where you can overclock, you want to be able to push these limits higher. That's the whole point. You buy a key chip is for enthusiasts. It's the whole point. Otherwise, don't get a key chip. Get one without a number on the end and just run it as is. But you want to push them, don't you? So kind of... annoying because, I mean, dare I say it, and it's only a tiny percentage of me that's saying this and thinking this, I would, until this happened, I would never touch AMD with a 10-foot barge pole. But come next summer, I might consider it. We'll see. We'll come next summer when I upgrade my whole machine because I just want the best bang for your buck. And at the moment, AMD are killing it. They literally are killing it. They are releasing chips that are using less voltage, less heat is generated. They're bringing out cool things like 3D cache, and they're just basically destroying, well, not destroying the competition, but they're beating the competition. So yeah. I don't know, Greg. We'll need to see what happens. I know you have AMD, then you had those issues, so you switched to Intel, and hopefully you don't regret
that. No, actually, well, to go back on the AMD, I had it for 3.5 years and had zero issues. It just, the last issue was just something I couldn't get over. And to this day, I don't think it had anything to do with the chip. I think it was more the motherboard, but whatever.
What?
But it is kind of funny that I decided to, because I flip-flopped before between AMD and Intel several times over in my long career here. So it was about time to go back to Intel. So I did it. But it's so funny. I go back to it, and within a few months, the story breaks. Oh, the chips are corroded. I'm going like, don't even tell me this, man. I think you are right, though. They're going to have an answer for it. And from what I understand, their answers so far have been pretty lame. And they need to start, like, you know, running the PR thing a little bit better. But I think you're right. At the very least, you have to extend the warranty. I mean, if nothing else, as a show of good faith, you need to do that.
Yeah.
So I hope they do. I mean, I haven't heard anything yet, but I hope they do.
Well,
but can you imagine looking at your chip all of a sudden and you see it looks like a rusty nail? You're going like, what happened?
Bye bye. Speaking of CPU manufacturers, AMD, and this is maybe a coincidence. It won't be a coincidence, surely to God. AMD Ryzen, right? So they're CPU side of the business, not their GPU. Right. They are going to delay their new 9000 series CPUs for quality assurance purposes. I wonder why they're doing that. Just to double check.
Could there be a corrosion thing going on? No.
Just to triple. I wouldn't imagine there's any problem. It's not delayed by long, a few weeks or something. But, I mean, yeah, that's not a coincidence at all.
Aren't the chips all coming out of the same building or something?
Well, here's the interesting thing, right? Not to make this into a long point in the story. So there is a difference. Intel, for example, are a chip designer and fabricator, right? And mm-hmm. when I say fabricator, I mean they make them. There are not many companies that make. It's fascinating, the world of chip designing, and especially fabs, as they call them, right? This is where this whole meltdown thing came in. Well, not meltdown. Get meltdown on the brain. During lockdown, during the pandemic, there was a shortage of chips because not as many people could work and blah, 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 blah. And there was issues. And like, so there's a couple of big players in the market. There's Intel, who design their chips and make them. Mm-hmm. You've got TSMC, or is it TCMC?
TSMC.
That's it. Yeah. One line of those characters, anyway. Yeah. They are probably the biggest name in Intel. That's why they're scared if Taiwan ever go to war with China and blah, blah, blah. Then that's why the Americans are like making more chip fabs in their own country, so they don't have to rely on it. And making them, designing them, it's a whole thing, and it's fat. And the machine that designs the latest architecture of chips is like Apple design their chips, but they don't make them. So they'll then put an order into whomever. AMD do not make their own chips. Here's the interesting thing. They design them. They get the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. There we go. If I just say it the long way, I get it right. They get them to make their chips. Now, Intel are not going to make their chips. Well, they would, but they charge an absolute fortune. So there are other people that make them, but they're the main players. So I'd imagine they're just double and triple checking AMD to make sure nothing's wrong, so they don't get, because they could run away with the competition for a while. They really could.
I'm sure they're going to try to jump on it if they can.
Squeaky bum time there. But anyway, so that was kind of a bit of the mayhem that's going on. And I kind of find that a little bit interesting, especially if you watch the Gamer Nexus stuff with Steve. He usually goes in and rips people a new one when they start failing or ripping people off. He ripped Asus a new one as well for their ROG Ally, you know, the little Steam Deck competitor, because when they were getting problems with that, like melting SD card readers and stuff, people would send in for repairs and get no repairs done in return and get them sent back or get charged different amounts. And customer service is really bad. So anyway, right. Anyway, moving on there, Gray. You do actually have something in the mod corner this week, don't you?
Yep. We got one thing in the mod corner I thought was kind of cool. Arkham City. You remember Batman Arkham City? And apparently they're getting a new overhaul as a mod, of course. And it's supposed to be very brutal. So what do we mean by brutal? Well, a lot of people, me included, think that probably Batman Arkham City was the best superhero game they ever made. It, believe it or not, it was 2011, so we're talking a little, you know, a good while ago. That's what.
Was that the last
years.
One, Gray? The last Batman? Was that Arkham Knight that was the last one?
No, Arkham Knight was the last one, I believe, right, if right, I'm right. right. But when they came out, I mean, I played the heck out of them because you really felt like you were the Batman. And the fighting mechanics in the game were outrageous. It was so good, and still is. And I still haven't seen anything quite as good as that one. Mm-hmm. So some modders decided to get together, and they wanted to basically make an overhaul of the systems. Now, but they were mostly paying attention to the difficulty of the battle, and the reason why is because for fans out there that still play the game, and have played it so much that even hard mode isn't challenging anymore. So now they're coming out with insane difficulty mode. and basically they said that if you're only the fearless or the criminally insane would even try this. This is what they're saying.
Oh, deal. Okay,
so then. Basically, if you thought the hard mode was hard, wait till you see this thing. So basically you really have to be on your toes playing Batman. I saw a video of the game with the mod loaded in. And yeah, wow, if you're not really on your game, you know, one or a couple of hits by a crowbar or whatever, you're done already. So yeah, you have to stay on top of your game as far as beating up a mob of bad guys. But I thought that was really great. I mean, for people that now they have this to go to, it's going to become almost a new game for them because they're not just going to be able to breeze through it any longer. You might know the layouts, but you're not going to be able to get past the enemies unless you know what you're doing. So this mm-hmm. is the cool thing about mods. Things can be changed. Things can be improved. Things can be, you know, the reason why modders do this is because there's an audience that wants this kind of stuff. And so if they're very talented, they go out and they do it. And some modders, like we said before, have actually made it into actual companies. Maybe not now, though, because they're laying them all off. But
are you going to try this yourself, Gray? Are you tempted to go in and try
it? I'm tempted to do it. But with me, though, even though I played the game a bunch, I haven't played it in years, and I didn't play it on hard mode. I played it on, like, average mode or
you
whatever.
Never play a game in hard mode.
No, I don't either. Why? Well, I'm not going to torture myself. Now, some people, I watch a couple of videos sometimes of people that are good at playing on hard mode, and I'm looking at this going, like, wow. I couldn't even come close to doing the stuff that they were doing. I mean, I saw a guy play, Horizon Forbidden West in very hard mode or whatever it was, the hardest difficulty. And I couldn't even believe he was getting through the game. I mean, if it was me, I'm dead every time. I'd be waving at the dinosaur, and I'm dead. That would be it.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
But the cool thing, like I said, is there's a mod for everything out there, and there's so many of them, you know, but I always warn people, though, make sure that you know what mod you're getting into. Make sure that you understand how to install it. Many times there'll be a video on YouTube telling you how, or they will have very distinct separate README files that just tell you exactly what to do. And many times it's not as difficult as you think. If you're not into trying to do things quite like that, then stick with Nexus Mods because they do have a program that you can download. It's not invasive or do anything to your computer. But what it is, it's a mod manager, and it makes it much simpler because you can basically just say, okay, I want to load these five mods in this game to improve the graphics or change whatever. And once it knows the mods that you want in, it basically knows and understands that those five have to always be on, and they will always be on, loaded, and ready to go when you play the game. Mm-hmm. The other cool thing about the mod manager is that it will constantly look out for updates because the modders, of course, are updating their files just like real game devs would. And it detects that there's an improvement to the mod, and it will automatically download it for you. and then be ready when you start to play the game. Pretty cool. And the other thing that I really like about the mod manager, too, is that you can turn off a mod or turn on a mod with just a click of the mouse. So let's say that you're playing with a mod and you don't particularly like it anymore. I mean, you did like it, but for whatever reason, it got old to you and you want to look for something else. You just go over there and just turn it off. But you don't want to uninstall it because you might like to put it back in again one day. So don't uninstall it. Just turn it off. And when you play the game, it's gone.
I've got a modding question for you, Greg. One of your favorite games of all time or franchises, Sniper Elite. Can you get mods for Sniper Elite?
Good question. I have to look back and see what's available for those. I do know I remember seeing some things with a few little changes. Here's the problem sometimes with some of those games. It's not that there's not a loyal following to Sniper Elite and Sniper Ghost Warrior. There is, and I'm one of them. But because it's not a big time game, then there's not as many mods being done for it because not as many people are maybe interested in doing a mod for it.
Well, it's up to the devs as well. They have to enable the game to accept mods, otherwise.
No, because I'll tell you why. The modders are really smart. That's why. When Starfield came out, there was already hundreds of mods before they ever came out with the kit. Now, when a kit comes out by the developer, it makes it a hell of a lot easier to do a mod. You know, I mean, it's still a lot of work, but it makes it easier. But these people didn't wait. There was already, I think when the game, before the dev kit came out, there was already a couple hundred mods. I mean, these people are really talented. They come out of nowhere and just make this stuff. I don't put past any modder that if they really want to mod the game, no matter what game it is, they'll do it. The only games you don't see mods for, and it makes all the sense in the world, is the MMO kind of games that are all dependent on online access. And that's because the devs constantly change the MMO games anyway. That's part of the pattern of an MMO game. So you can't load any mods on those. But any other game is fair play. So, and I'm always like, for instance, I put a couple of mods in on Horizon Forbidden West, and there was one that was called More Realistic Color. And also, I never really realized this before, but the game's Horizon, even in Horizon Zero Dawn, had kind of a red cast or a kind of a reddish cast or orangey kind of cast to it. Uh-huh. It's not like it was like bright orange. I'm not trying to say that. But it was almost kind of like if you were to take a very, very light colored orange filter and stick it in front of your lens of your camera, let's say, or over your eye and you're looking through it. But I never really realized that. And the game was great and who cared? And then when the guy came out with this, I said, oh, that's interesting. So I went ahead and loaded it in. Wow. All of a sudden that orange hue was gone and everything did look more realistic. Even the hair and stuff looked more real. Like Aloy's hair looked more like a real redhead as opposed to somebody who just,
Ginger gray, ginger.
Yeah, whatever. Actually, ginger is white. You know that, right? What? The ginger root is white.
Oh,
not red.
Shut up.
So anyway, I was like really, really surprised. And I was sitting there going, wow, this really kind of changes the tonality. And I was just like, this is pretty cool. Yeah. So I really did enjoy it. Now I actually like it. And then, of course, some of the graphical, you know, they improved a couple of the other graphic points on the game, too. And it's amazing how they can do that as well. They've been boosting, I think, the original Zero Dawn. There's some mods out there now that you can play it in 4K now. It wasn't meant to be originally because it came out years ago. But now you can have it boosted up to 4K. That's the other cool thing with mods. If your game was only 1080p or wasn't capable of getting over at 1080p or maybe 1440p, which is good. I play in that. But can't make 4K. They have mods that'll boost it up to 4K. Crazy.
4K or nothing, man. I want my shiny and my frames at the same time.
I mean, when I went to buy my monitor, I had a choice of either going and getting a really good monitor for 1440p and 240Hz refresh rate, which I wanted because the price just happened to be right. I just lucked out. Or the 4K. And I'm sitting there looking, and I'm going like, yeah, the price was so much more for the 4K, and I wasn't getting the 240Hz and everything that this one was going to give me for the good price. And I just said, yeah, I'm doing it. And I don't regret it. I mean, I love it. And we're not going to talk about this now, but next week there is something we are going to talk about, to where my 240 hertz monitor is going to come in real handy.
Yeah, I know.
Just by luck.
I know what he's talking about. We will leave it to next week, but that's old news, Gray. I'm surprised you didn't know, but I'm sure we discussed it as well.
Anyway. What I didn't realize is we can talk a little bit about what we're going to cover next week. Why not? So next week will be Once Human with me, Trevor, and Matt. We're also going to talk about a thing called lossless scaling, which is something that was created that's not NVIDIA nor AMD. And I didn't know this, but technically lossless scaling came out in 2018. Originally,
yeah, it's something you buy on Steam, isn't it? Something you buy in Steam, yeah. It's not perfect, but yeah.
No, but the articles that have come out now is because it is almost perfect, and I think that's why they jumped on the wagon now. All of a sudden, I thought it was brand new, but it's not. We'll talk about it next week, but there's some really interesting thing, and I've just installed it, and I've got to start tweaking it a little bit, and I will play with on it, and we will get back to it.
Just to say, Greg, you kind of don't need to use it because you've got DLSS 3.0.
Not when you need to watch the video and read a little bit about the research.
No, I know about it. Digital Foundry done a good article on it as well.
That's what I was talking about.
Because they
even mentioned DLS and they mentioned FSR and everything with AMD, and they were saying that this is actually better in a lot of ways because it is specific to frame rate. So it will either double or triple the frame rate. And we'll talk about it more next week. I don't want to give it all away, but you can basically change to double or triple frame rate. But we'll talk about it more next week. That's a teaser for next week.
All right. we don't have a quiz this week from Mr.
Yes,
Lord.
Do.
So do we?
No, not Lord.
But I haven't finished my sentence. Oh, okay, what I was going to say was, We don't have a quiz from Mr. Lord. We don't, not from Lord.
I was actually
correct. So I don't know why you jumped in. So we don't have one from him, but we have one from Mr. Gray. So it's probably going to be nowhere near as good, but probably a lot better than Matt's last week. I'm so sorry for Matt.
Oh yeah, that
was an awful man. I had to step away. I was like, oh my God. Yeah,
itself was funny though. I mean,
God bless
some of the questions that were coming out. We were like, going, "Oh no!"
At least he tried. At least Mr. Matt tried. It's 10 out of 10 for effort. But yeah, you've got one yourself, mate. So go for it. Put me out my misery.
All right. So we have three questions, and I will read out the question, and then we can guess. Or if anybody in the chat wants to guess, they can too. I don't know the answer until I flip this piece of paper.
Oh, okay, interesting.
What is the name of the company Marcus Pearson sold the rights to Minecraft to in 2014? Not really a hard question, not this one.
Microsoft.
So what is the name of the company Marcus Pearson sold the rights to Minecraft to in 2014?
Microsoft Limited.
Ding, 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 ding. You're right.
that's a whole fascinating story. That's how they started getting involved in gaming like properly. There was people at Xbox had to convince Microsoft to go, listen, guys, this is going to be massive. Please buy this game out. And they paid a fortune for it, but it earned them back that money and some. So, yeah, fascinating.
Yeah. Everybody, I think, at the time thought it was like stupid to pay that kind of money, but it doesn't look so stupid now.
Nope.
So all looks good. All right. Here gets a little harder question now. This is the second one.
All right.
In what year was the classic game Lemmings released?
A
little note. Lemmings was developed by DMA Design. It was published by Psygnosis, and it was played on Amiga. Remember Amiga?
Mm-hmm.
Other PC systems, PlayStation 2, and a couple of other old consoles as well. So if you got an idea, or maybe if you're close, you know, of what year it came out.
Well, you gave me a clue.
They made a sequel called More Lemmings, I think it was.
You gave me a clue. PlayStation 2 era. So PlayStation 2 era.
I should have said that.
Yeah, PlayStation 2 era was it not round about? I'm going to guess. I'll get it wrong, but I remember roughly when the PlayStation 2 era was. I'm going to say 2001.
Wrong.
You guys won't hear that, but he put his little speaker noise in the you roll.
Oh man, did it get recorded? Darn.
No, it does only for my admit.
You are off by 10 years.
Well, do you want to know something? On you go.
It was actually 1991.
I was going to see before you gave me the PlayStation 2 clue. I was actually going to say, I was going to guess 92 because it felt like a 92 game. But then when you said PlayStation 2, I was like, but PlayStation 2 was way later than that. So that confused the hell out of me, mate.
Should have had a clue when I said Amiga, though. If it was played on Amiga.
True, yeah. Maybe it was one of the other sequel games that came out to PlayStation 2 or they released it at PlayStation 2 later on. Ah, huh? Oh, that's so annoying, man. Anyway, right, carry on.
Now, I like this next question because I didn't know this. What is the name of the first video game that was brought into space by an astronaut?
Tetris.
I didn't even know they brought a game with them.
Tetris, I'm just kidding.
I never heard this before. So what is the name of the first video game that was brought into space by an astronaut?
Tetris.
Okay, that your first and final guess?
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong. It was StarCraft.
Oh, for feck's sake.
Isn't that wild?
What do you mean it wasn't Kerbal or it wasn't Space Engineers or something? No,
well, that wasn't out then. But I'm thinking about something now. StarCraft. So if they brought it into space, what did they play it on? Did they have an old computer they'd lugged along with them? It wasn't mobile then, right?
It must have been. And they got servers and stuff up there. So someone decided to delete the life support subroutines and right. put that on instead.
So that brings a whole nother problem. Like you just said, they're sitting there going like their computers are used to run everything at that time, especially back then, right? And the computers were larger back then as well. So I'm sitting there going like, dude, did you try to load this game into a system that you really shouldn't have done?
Yeah, you deleted the docking subroutines. We can't get out now.
The redundant system. So as soon as one went down, you went like, oh, do we have the redundant system? Oh, well, great. We have StarCraft.
They do have computers actually in the ISS. That's a very interesting point because I think I watched a documentary on this and you go through, it was a YouTuber that managed to, in fact, it might have even been Linus Tech Tips, possibly, that got a server that was used on a space station, or the space station, sorry. And it was fascinating to watch because he said, you would think, oh, yeah, computer up there, no bother, easy. But he said these things have to be so robust because the amount of radiation they'll get, chips can get fried, and then, like, obviously there's ones and zeros in a standard computing system, isn't there? And you don't want bits getting flipped and things. So there's so much shielding and stuff that goes into making these things solid. It's actually I'll go back and check this. He actually, Linus, goes to the actual one of the companies that makes the stuff for them, and they're in a test capsule, one of the actual sections of the ISS, playing about with these computers. And he looked like a kid in a sweetie shop, man. He was in his element, all this technology and stuff around him.
It's interesting when you said about that shielding and stuff. So that means that even more so back then, the guy had to load it onto a system that they had there. I just don't. That
floppy
really
disk.
Brings up a whole new can of worms. How did he get away with it?
Floppy disk.
Or did they plan it from the beginning? I mean, I wouldn't put it past a NASA engineer on the ground to say, hey, we're gonna do this, but don't tell them. And they go ahead and they worked it in and actually installed the game on one of the computers so that they didn't screw up other stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. You almost had to do that before you went into space. So I'll guarantee you somebody made a deal with a NASA engineer to go ahead and put it into their computers so that they could play it later or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's no way that they sat there. And I could just see an astronaut trying to program one of the computers back then. Oh, my God. I mean, anything could have happened. And that would have been horrible. So yeah, that's pretty interesting to say the least.
Anyway, that was an interesting quiz from you, Gray. Well done, well done. Right, okay. I think that's us for this week. So we'll wrap up and hopefully not to say Matt will be on every week. Just some weeks he'll be able to make it, some we won't, and he's on holiday at the moment. So hopefully next week he can join us, and we've all got a little bit more of. Once human under our belts as well. Like I say, if my base is gone and it's not even the end of a scenario, I'm probably out because there's no way I'm doing that again. And it's it's not even wiped yet. We'll see, though. We'll see.
I would advise before August 20th that you get the proper blueprints so that when
yeah,
it happens,
build your
base back pretty easily.
Yep. I think so as well, mate.
Go for the prefabs.
The prefabs it is. Right, we will wrap up there, people. Hopefully, my outro last time worked audibly, but visually didn't work. So I guess we'll see if it works this time. Either way, we'll see you next week. Until then, say goodbye to the people, Gray.
See you, everybody. Check us out next week. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Goodbye.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart I have but one desire, and that one is you. No other can do. We'll be right back.